are reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 7, titled Further Inquiries by Vidura, text number 18. Arthabhavam Minishchitya
Arthabhavam Minishchitya
Pratitasya Pitnatmanaha Tamchabi Api also. Na,
no.
Never.
Never.
Atmanaha,
Atmanaha,
of the self.
Tam,
Tam,
that.
That. Cha,
Cha,
also.
Also.
Api,
Api,
thus.
Thus.
Yushmat,
Yushmat,
your.
Charana,
Charana,
feet.
Sevaya,
Sevaya,
by service.
By service.
Aham,
Aham,
myself.
Myself.
Paranude,
Paranude,
shall be able to give up.
Shall be able to give up.
Translation. But, my dear sir, I am obliged to you because now I can understand that this material manifestation is without substance, although it appears real. I am confident that by serving your lotus feet, it will be possible for me to give up the false idea. Purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Srila Prabhupada ki. The sufferings of the conditioned soul are superficial and have no intrinsic value, like the cutting of one's head in a dream. Yet, although this statement is theoretically very true, it is very difficult for the common man or the neophyte on the transcendental path to realize practically. However, by serving the feet of great transcendentalists like Maitreya Muni, and by constantly associating with them, one is enabled to give up the false idea that the soul suffers from material pangs. Om Jnana Timirandasya Jnana Jana Salakaya Chakshur Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Padagamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijanasahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dinabandho Jagatpade Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanjana Gorangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Prashabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Haripriye Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhye Vacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare 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 Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare Bhuter Mahathir Yaima Puro Vibhu Nirmaya Shete Yadamusha Purusha Bhute Gunan Shodasha Shodashatmaka Solam Krishishta Bhagavan Vacham Sime Hare Krishna. On this particular topic of the sufferings of the jiva in the material world, even in the presence of the Supreme Lord, has been discussed so far. And Maitreya Muni had already presented the philosophical answer to this question, along with enough analogies. Now, Vidura has expressed his gratitude to Maitreya Muni for instructing such invaluable instructions in the form of the philosophy. So here, in this philosophy, we can see that there is this paradoxical nature for the jiva to suffer in this material world. On one side, jiva is completely above the three modes of material nature. As we know, the jiva is transcendental, Sachidananda. So a jiva is not supposed to suffer at all, because suffering is not the constitutional position of the jiva, and it is not an ingredient of the jiva at all, because he is ananda, anandamaya abhyasat. He is ananda, he has bliss. So how could such a jiva suffer in the material world? Because there is no possibility at all for a jiva, a soul, to mix with the matter. There is no such possibility. Just like if we pour oil into water, there is no possibility of mixing oil and water. So on one side we can see that it is impossible for the jiva to get contaminated. It is impossible for the jiva to be mixed in the three modes of material nature. So this is one paradox. And at the same time, from our practical experience, observing ourselves and observing others, we can come to the conclusion that a jiva is suffering. So Bhagavatam philosophy is very profound, because it gives answer to this paradox. It actually reconciles this paradoxical situation by presenting one philosophical concept along with different analogies. And what is this philosophical concept that helps us to understand that a pure jiva, which cannot be conditioned, can get conditioned and can apparently suffer in the material world? So what is that junction between the jiva and the three modes of material nature? What is that junction? Exactly. That junction is nothing but the false ego. So because of false ego, the jiva, even though above the material nature, identifies with the material nature. So the most subtle form of matter is nothing but the false ego. So that is the junction. So that actually connects to the matter. And then a jiva thinks he is suffering and actually goes through the all tribulations of material existence. And here one wonderful analogy is presented, and that is that of Swapne Shira Chedano Yatha. In the dream, Shira Chedana, how one dreams that his head has been cut off in the dream. And he is witnessing his head being cut off in the dream. And he is panicking, seeing that, freaking out, seeing that, which is an impossibility. Because having seen one's own, it's not possible to see one's own head being chopped off. It's impossible. So it is called illusion. However, because of that false identification, the jiva suffers. So jiva is still, jiva is not suffering, because his constitutional Sachidananda form is unaffected. Even if he sees, even if his body is completely chopped off, it is torn into pieces, still the Sachidananda form of the jiva is unaffected. In that way the jiva is not suffering. But because of identification, who can only suffer? Body cannot suffer, mind cannot suffer, independent of jiva, independent of the soul. So the only person who can experience pain, or the only person who can experience suffering, is jiva. So jiva must suffer. Even though illusory, jiva must suffer. So jiva is suffering. So this is the paradoxical nature of suffering of the jiva in the material world. So this is very beautifully explained, and here again in the purport, this example of cutting off one's own head is presented. Now, after presenting this, even though very short, this translation and purport is leading to a very important aspect of our devotional service. Because so far, in these verses, the knowledge is presented, the jnana is presented. Now, how could it be transformed into practical reality? How can jnana be transformed into vijnana? What is the possibility of that? So that the answer is given in this verse, that by following the instructions of the spiritual master, by serving his lotus feet, one can transform this. So here, it's a mystery in one sense. Because at one point we understand the philosophy, but when it actually comes to a real life situation, we are trembling. We are trembling in fear. We don't know what we can do. We completely forget what we have heard in the philosophy. So how can we transform, and what are the different stages and aspects of transforming our knowledge into practical reality? So we will discuss a little bit on this topic. So if we try to see what is the medium through which this transformation happens? First, we can understand that when we have a sincere desire after hearing the philosophy that, okay, we need to practice this, then we see that by the mercy of the Lord, by the mercy of Krishna, through the devotees, one gets the opportunities to serve. So as we perform devotion service, Krishna reveals himself. Krishna gives realizations. So this is the basic medium. As Krishna says, Ananya Chintayantoma Yajana Paripasade Tesha Nitya Bhyukta. Sorry. Yoga Kshema Mahamiham. But what's the beginning of the other one I was looking for? Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upayantite. What's the beginning of the verse? Tesham Sadadayuktanam Bhajatam Priti Purvakam. Dadami Buddhi Yogam Tam Yena Mam Upayantite. So Tesham Sadadayuktanam. So one who is constantly engaged in devotional service. So this devotional service is coming because there is some desire for the devotee to realize this. Not after hearing, okay, we need to do something. Then Krishna orchestrates this devotional service through the devotees. And as we perform devotional service, Krishna will give enough intelligence, Krishna will give enough realization to do that service. And also Krishna gives intelligence and realization to continue one's devotional service. So in due course of one's life, one may have performed many services, or one may have done pretty much one predominant service. But in either case, Krishna is constantly supplying realizations. Krishna is transforming this knowledge into reality. So that's why there is a difference between theoretical knowledge and practical vision of the knowledge. We often say they use the word Shastra Chakshu. What is Shastra Chakshu? Shastra Chakshu is nothing but the knowledge that has been given, the theory, is actually now becoming reality. So one is able to see the world through Shastra. Because one otherwise one just sees the world through the experience he had in the material world or what he had heard from someone else. But there is no, or just sense perception, but there is no possibility of seeing the Shastra as one's own vision. So there is no separate vision. This is the one, when one, a devotee has the same vision as the Supreme Lord, because the Lord's vision is given through the Shastra. And when the devotee initially, maybe through a push, through practice, tries to apply the Bhagavad Gita verses or Bhagavatam verses and tries to see the world. And from that, when actually one moves to completely seeing the world through Shastra, that is real Shastra Chakshu. So that one actually transforms into practical realization, because there is no separate vision than the Lord, because the Lord's vision is Shastra and a devotee is just seeing through the Shastra. So this is the transformation of the vision from one's own material vision to that of the Lord. And for a materialist, it's exactly separate from that of the Lord. It's always the same. He sees through his sense perception, he sees through his desires to enjoy the world, and he can never identify with that of the Lord. So he is completely in separate world altogether, is in illusion. That's where here Vidura is making the point that, look, now I can understand that the material manifestation is without substance. The substance and shadow. Substance and shadow. The material world is considered just a shadow, and substance is something else. We will discuss further what is the substance and what is shadow with respect to our own devotional service. What are the wrong identification that can come in our own devotional practice? So in a devotee's life, when we start our devotional service as a neophyte and as we make progress, one goes through different stages in our devotional service. Not necessarily through the varieties of services. Yes, of course, that can be the part. However, an internal journey. A devotee goes through a journey of realizations in which he actually matures as a devotee from a neophyte. So we can see even in the life of Srila Prabhupada, even though Srila Prabhupada is a Nitya Siddha, he also demonstrates many things. Because if you try to see Leelamrita, Srila Prabhupada's Leelamrita, before going to America, Srila Prabhupada's life, it is narrated as a life of preparation. Though it just looks like that of a sadhaka, a neophyte, preparing himself to embark on a big preaching mission. But Srila Prabhupada, he is a Nitya Siddha, he is a pure devotee. However, in his life, he also apparently shows as a sadhaka. You know, he's you know, he was in the Gandhian movement and meeting with some of his friends, pushing him to go to meet a sadhu, which he was reluctant to meet a sadhu because he had such bad experiences throughout his childhood, where his father would bring so many sadhus to his home and they would serve the sadhus. And Srila Prabhupada understood these sadhus, some of them were fake. But his father was so enthusiastic in serving sadhus. So he had a kind of reluctance to meet with this kind of sadhus. But his friends pushed him. Just like, you know, we can feel like as of our own life, you know, one of our friends, you know, pushed, okay, come to the temple. Okay, we'll go to the temple, look, attend one arati, eat some prasadam, attend a lecture. Eventually we take some interest in the Krishna consciousness. In the same way, he met with his Guru Maharaj, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Then eventually he took the instruction seriously, but he couldn't do anything. Even he got initiated after 11 years or so, after a long time. So then we can see he had interest in preaching, but it wasn't successful. It was just, you know, it was not really happening. He was helping here and there, but he hadn't embarked on a big preaching mission yet. So meanwhile, he was assimilating the whole Shastra. If you see Srila Prabhupada's purport, it has practically the commentaries, the essence of commentaries of all previous acharyas, including Sandarbhas, you know, including the previous acharya, including Sandarbhas, the highest philosophical truths that have been presented by Jiva Goswami, that is present in these purports. So Srila Prabhupada is assimilating this knowledge, and it took time in one sense to enact his pastime of going to the West and preaching Krishna consciousness. So it is indeed a lifetime of preparation. And Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur identified the potential of Srila Prabhupada. Whatever he writes, print it, publish it. When the time comes, he will do everything. So Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur made such statements to show the unique position of his dear disciple Srila Prabhupada. And when what happened, then still Srila Prabhupada, he was continuing with his business. And at one point, the final attempt for his business was completely shattered as the whole factory burned down, right? Then when a telegram came, right? He was in Jhansi or something. And when the telegram came, he read the telegraph or whatever. And he read that the whole business now, everything is completely shattered. There is nothing left. That time, Srila Prabhupada was completely ready. He smiled at that news. And he actually remembered this verse. Tasyaham anugrahami taddhanam shanai. What is that? Tasyaham anugrahami harishye taddhanam shanai. That's right. Harishye taddhanam shanai. So when the Lord becomes completely pleased with his devotee, what he does? He takes away everything. So he is deprived of all the wealth, all the possessions. Then what happens? All the relatives, all the friends, they reject such a devotee. And he has nothing, because materially he has nothing. And in terms of familial relationship, he has nothing. Then he takes complete shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And the Lord reciprocates in that way. So when Srila Prabhupada meditated on this verse from Srimad Bhagavatam, he became very happy. And then we know the pastime of Srila Prabhupada. He took shelter of Krishna. He embarked upon his preaching mission. So even in Srila Prabhupada's life, it looks like a lifetime of preparation. Indeed, it's a lifetime of preparation, but not really from a sadhaka to a prema bhakta, but from a, you know, advanced stage, but his leela. Same we can see in Bhaktivinoda Thakur also, approaching different philosophies and finally coming in touch with Krishna consciousness and accepting Krishna consciousness and becoming a preacher of Krishna consciousness and perfecting in Krishna consciousness. So these are pastimes showing, starting from a neophyte stage to advancing in spiritual quest. Now, let's place ourselves in our quest in Krishna consciousness, our journey in Krishna consciousness. So we started our Krishna consciousness to some degree or other. Now, when we progress in our Krishna consciousness, we need to see the shortcomings of our practice. Say, for example, we always take the classic example that we are inattentive in chanting and we are inattentive in all other things. In most of our devotional service, we become inattentive. It's not just restricted to chanting. Say, chanting becomes mechanical. Chanting Hare Krishna, even though it is read, we have heard, it is completely ecstatic. But still, when we chant Hare Krishna Mahamantra, it becomes just like, you know, a mechanical process. And aim becomes just to finish off the rounds. You know, I have done my rounds, you know, 16 done. So my job is done, I can do anything else. So our mentality becomes, it's just mechanical. Similarly, kirtan becomes an entertainment. Right? You know, many times the kirtan becomes an entertainment. Do different steps, you know, different moves, you know, jump around. And in jumping around, we don't even chant. Have you noticed? When it becomes very ecstatic in jumping, then chanting actually stops. Right? It happens. So this is, then if somebody is even Brahman initiated, one, if one observes oneself, one sees even chanting the Gayatri Mantra, it is just mechanical. In a few minutes, you know, just close the eyes or look everywhere. But still, it's a mechanical process. But there is no deep connection to the mantra. One is not really understanding meaning of the mantra. So it's not restricted to Hare Krishna Mahamantra. It can come into chanting of Gayatri Mantra also. And if you see Tulsi Arati or any Arati, Tulsi Arati becomes just mechanical. You know, it is part of the trance, morning trance. You know, get up from the bed, you know, Mangalarati is part of the trance, you know, in half sleep, you know, just, you know, slowly waking up, then the rest of the part, you know, one is moving to the Tulsi Arati, that's also just going on, you know, the Arati finishes, you know, then one moves into chanting is, you know, moving on. So one can actually become a mechanical process of devotional service. And indeed, if we consider what is this process of devotional service we perform in this mood, it is called Niyamagraha. What is Niyamagraha? It is described in Nectar of Instruction. What is Niyamagraha? There are two definitions for Niyamagraha. What are they?
Follow just for the sake of it.
Yeah. Okay, one meaning of Niyamagraha is following all the principles for the sake of following the principles. And second one is not following the principles at all. Yeah, whimsically. Or just not following. Yeah? I don't want to follow. So these are called Niyamagraha. In the spiritual quest, these two points are very important. Both are classified under the term Niyamagraha. So it's interesting that chanting for the sake of chanting is Niyamagraha. We may not realize that point, but you know, just, you know, I have to do my, you know, 2 hours of chanting or whatever I have committed to or more. I have to just do it. That is actually Niyamagraha. Because it is still mechanical. Attending the arati just for the sake of attending the arati. Which is good. One shouldn't do that, okay. No, I will not chant because it is Niyamagraha. Better I don't chant. I stop attending arati. But it is to go to the next level. That is the whole purpose. See, that's also Niyamagraha. Then in the Niyamagraha stage, when we are doing everything, when we have the desire, we are very fortunate if we think that I want to make progress from this condition of sadhana. I want to go further in my devotional service. It's a big step in our devotional service. That from the inattentive chanting to I want to chant attentively. Instead of attending all the programs, just, you know, just being there by being physically present where there is no internal connection. Okay, I want to make a difference. If we think like that, it's a big step. Even the spiritual practice. So then, we try to be quite determined. When this thought comes to our mind, we become quite determined. Okay, I want to do this. So I want to attentively chant the Hare Krishna Mahamantra. I want to attend all the programs very nicely. I want to be internally absorbed. We try to do that based on the knowledge. Because here we are trying to apply the knowledge and we are trying to make Gyan into Vigyan. So in this process we try to pull all our determination and try to endeavor to make a push in our spiritual progress. So one can do for a few months. But still, what happens? It actually takes up. It is like a rocket and it just goes up for some time. But it can stay for some time, but again it actually comes down. This is the nature of one's spiritual journey. One actually takes up, it goes for some time, again it comes down and one actually start the problems one already had before. Again, chanting goes inattentive. Whatever absorption one had in hearing Bhagavatam or seeing the deities, it actually goes down. So it actually took up, again going down. So one can wonder what's actually going on. Then this stage of devotion, it is actually called Niyamakshama. Niyamakshama means one doesn't have the sufficient determination or taste to be steady in devotional service. Even though we desire that, we don't have the sufficient determination or faith to be steady progress in devotional service. So one actually again coming down. So at that point, a devotee can see what is the major cause for our inattentive chanting and all the offenses against chanting. So everything actually boils down to, one sense it boils down to inattentive chanting and also our tendency to do aparadhas, our tendency to do offenses. It can be big offense or small offense. One may think, you know, he's not such a senior devotee, he's just a neophyte. So I can criticize him. I can think bad about him. He's a senior devotee, he's my guru, I will not criticize him. Or they are all senior devotees, Srila Prabhupada's disciples, or being in the movement for 30, 40 years. I will not criticize him. I will not find any fault in them. But anyone else, I have the right to criticize. I have the right to find fault. So when one has this mentality, one needs to really, really beg the Supreme Lord. We had to beg the devotees to get out from this offensive mentality. So for example, before chanting, we always do this pranam, right? So we are doing this, actually there's a purpose so that we can actually really ask for forgiveness for all the offenses that we have committed. But how many times we do sincerely think that we are begging for offenses while doing this pranam? Hardly any time. So when a devotee, when he wants to be steady, then he actually tries to avoid these offenses and he actually begs for forgiveness if he has done any offenses to anyone. So one understands there is no other way to be steady in spiritual progress. One cannot be offensive to anyone. If to a devotee or a non-devotee, one can say, okay, I can, you know, I can not offend a spiritual practitioner, but others I can offend. No. So that is called offense to a just a living entity. That is also that can also hamper one's devotional progress. So one actually takes it to heart that I shouldn't offend anyone and I must pray for forgiveness. Then one actually moves towards one's steadiness in devotional service. And there are a few other aspects to it. It is said that even if one actually tries all the aspects to be steady in devotional service, if still one cannot achieve that, one shouldn't be disheartened. One should see first if there is the, if continuing to practice very sincerely for a decent period of time, still if one is not seeing the result, it is recommended that one should apprise one's devotional progress and one should apprise one's devotional practice. Am I doing the right things? One should consult senior devotees. Ask, am I doing the right things? Am I mistaken in any point? One should see. And if one finds out, okay, I'm doing everything fine, but still I can't see that I'm making any spiritual progress, then it is recommended that one should simply continue one's devotional practice. That's all. And then leave up the result up to Krishna. When Krishna wants to make me steady, he will do so. I'll just continue my devotional service. And it is said, result will come indeed without any doubt. And now, in our spiritual journey, what are the other things we need to really look into? One obstacle in our devotional progress is seniority consciousness. We may think the seniority consciousness is only for the devotees who may, you know, we may think, you know, who has practiced for 30 or 40 or 50 years of devotional service. No. Even one person who is practicing, you know, for 2 years of chanting, one may think, you know, that guy, you know, I'm senior, you know, he's just came to the temple, you know, he's just practicing for, you know, 2 months, you know, he's just trying to chant one round, I'm so senior. Just by the year, or I have taken initiation maybe 1 year before him, so I am senior. Or I have taken initiation 10 years before him, so I am senior. So the years in devotional service, one identifies seniority with years in devotional service. This is speaking about one's own personal introspection, not that we shouldn't respect a person who is senior to us in terms of years. Definitely we must give that respect. It's not for this point, it's for our own introspection. So seniority based on years in devotional service and seniority based on position. I am in this position, so I am senior. Or I have practiced for this many years, so I am senior. So one, when one comes to this consciousness, this is actually blocking our devotional service. This is blocking our way to be steady in devotional service. So this is one thing we need to check. Then chanting, instead of chanting mechanically, one has to chant with feeling. One need to know about Krishna, one need to know about chanting, and one has to chant with feeling rather than and ask for mercy of the Lord rather than just mechanical chanting. So this will make one's devotional progress. Next, even reading Srila Prabhupada's books, when we read all these books, Bhagavatam, Bhagavad Gita, all the books, what we think, you know, yeah, I am getting the superior philosophy. You know, I am understanding this, I am understanding that, okay, I am remembering this, I am remembering that verse. So one moves more into philosophy and tries to understand this philosophy is superior than any other philosophy. So one's mentality is understanding the philosophy, understanding the superiority of the philosophy, and making sure that I know that. And when I am presenting the philosophy, I make sure that I present a point which others don't know. So I am superior. So philosophy is superior and I am also superior. And I can present them. So one's mentality in reading Srila Prabhupada's books is coupled with just presenting the philosophy and showing the superiority of ourselves along with the philosophy. Instead, while reading Srila Prabhupada's books, in our progress in our devotional service, one has to see how is it helping in my devotion rather than showing off or just philosophical establishment. How is it helping me? What is actually the devotion? And if we are interested in preaching, one has to see how this philosophy is helping others. Not just, you know, pushing them down, you know, I have a superior philosophy so I can just bang them. Rather, if preaching becomes an act of compassion, or sharing this knowledge becomes an act of compassion rather than showing the superiority. So this is the way of progressing, even reading Srila Prabhupada's books and presenting Srila Prabhupada's books. Then naturally, when another interesting point, devotees becomes quite interested in controversies, even in ISKCON, even in Krishna consciousness, want to discuss controversial topics. Maybe Rithik philosophy, maybe this, that, and very strong opinions about this, and want to quote Shastra, because the mind is completely passionate about controversial aspects, whatever is going on in the society or philosophical aspect, whatever. So one's mind is more passion rather than devotion. So one needs to see, even there can be controversies, but one needs to see with dispassionate intelligence rather than passionate mind. And along the line, one has to practice humility, because we are not really humble. We need to accept we are not really humble, but we can practice humility. One can see, one can try to see, one can place oneself in a humble position, because humility is equated to devotion. So it is equated to bhakti. So we cannot be just humble. I'll be humble from now onwards. It will not happen. But at least we can try to practice that. We can try to avoid pretending, and we can try to practice placing ourselves in a humble position by showing respect to others. Even though it can be external, but at least showing respect to others and stopping criticizing others like that. So we need to practice humility. And finally, we need to very important, we need to control our mind and senses. So if the steadiness means we need to control our mind and senses. So we need to use Krishna conscious knowledge in controlling our mind and senses on a practical way, practically all the time. And finally, it's actually really finally, that is the most important, that is one is reminded oneself of the purpose of Krishna consciousness. So one is reminded oneself of the purpose of Krishna consciousness. What is the purpose of Krishna consciousness? What is the purpose of Krishna consciousness? Yeah, that's right. And? Serving Krishna with love. Right? The aim, objective is to develop love for Krishna. In that way, we develop love for Krishna, and also we develop love for everyone. Everyone is connected to Krishna. We develop love for everyone also. So, that's the purpose. So, by reminding oneself of the purpose. So one, when one actually knows the purpose, if it is there in the mind, then it is easy to practice everything else. Then it is easy to practice, move away from the mechanical process of devotion service. It is easier to see oneself in a humble position than, you know, considering oneself, you know, as a big devotee, which is very natural for us to think. In that way, we can actually push ourselves to, you know, steadiness in devotion service, which we are aspiring for. So there are a bit of work that we have to do to come to a bit more steadiness in our devotional service. Because we can be externally steady, but internally it is not. The mind goes here, there. One day we are ecstatic, one day we are not. Whereas devotional service is meant to be ecstatic all the time. So in that way we can push. So that is the purport. We can see making the jnana, understanding knowledge theoretically that, okay, yes, we are not just this body, we are the soul, and soul never suffers from material pangs. But actually how we can come to that ecstatic stage. So we need to take these steps so that we can become steady in devotional service and we don't really suffer materially because we are not material. Nobody is material, everyone is spiritual. So I stop here and see if there are any questions or comments or corrections. Yes, Prabhu. Question is that after one understands Krishna, then there is no need of study of Vedas. So Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, Vedesya Sarvat Ahameva Vedyo. In all Vedas, I am to be known. So Veda has many aspects. Some are fruitive activities and impersonal knowledge, and some aspects is devotional service, bhakti. So the whole purpose of Veda is to know Krishna. So when one understands that the purpose of Veda is to serve Krishna, to perform bhakti, then there is no need of study of Vedas in terms of understanding fruitive activity or impersonal knowledge. Because both are covering Krishna, covering bhakti. Rather, one needs to know only bhakti. So the essence of Veda, even though Veda has many aspects, not just spiritual aspects, there's material aspects also. So the essential, topmost spiritual aspect of the Veda is bhakti, devotion to Krishna. And that is elaborated in Srimad Bhagavatam. So then only study of Srimad Bhagavatam is enough. So that is the meaning of that. So one who is in, so studying Srimad Bhagavatam is part of bhakti. So it is not Vedic study in terms of karma kanda, which is fruitive activity, or jnana kanda, which is impersonal understanding. So it is basically, that's what is rejected. It's not the devotion is rejected, which is present to some degree in Vedas. Yeah. Yes.
Just one comment. It is said that why our service is not stable, why we are not pure devotees, because of anarthas.
Yes.
The anartha are removed. You transcend the
wisdom. Thank you. So that's why we described it. Discussed on a few anarthas which we have. Thank you. Any further questions? Yeah, yes, please. Yeah. Oh, the meaning of serving the lotus feet of the guru. And we may even wonder how practical it is. A guru may be somewhere, you know, serving the lotus feet. How much service can we do the feet of the guru? Yes, it has a physical meaning. Yes, we can wash the feet of the guru. But we may, you know, in one lifetime, one time, we may have washed the feet of the guru, or sometimes never. So, yes, that is just a physical meaning. However, serving the lotus feet of the guru means following the instruction of the guru. So, the meaning of approaching the feet of a person, what's the meaning of approaching the feet of a person? We give prominence to the feet. Is right? You know, if you see, you know, we say, you know, we apply, we offer flowers to the feet, even offer, you know, special garland to the feet. It shows that we are humble, we are nothing in front of that person. It is showing our humble position. So, that is the meaning of approaching the feet of a person. Say, for example, one pay obeisances and touches the feet of a person. It means, you know, I am nothing in front of you. It's showing our humble position. So, approaching a spiritual master in that mood is very beneficial, or it is essential. It shows that, okay, I am ready to serve his instruction. So, if you don't have a humble attitude, we will not follow the instruction of a spiritual master. We don't follow practically. If you don't feel like connected and if you don't feel like humble, it is worthy of following anyone. Do we ever follow any instruction? Anyone, even our friend, anyone can give the best instruction. But if you don't feel that it is good to follow his instruction, we never follow that instruction. And especially if we feel proud, you know, who is this guy to give me instruction? I will not follow. It may be good instruction, I will not follow. You know, that is the general mentality. So, when it approaches the guru, we understand our spiritual life is completely dependent on the guru. So, we are ready to take the most humble position and we are ready to follow all the instructions of the guru. Because he is giving the instructions for our benefit. And by applying those instructions, as I told, we can apprise ourselves and see whether there is a progress. It's not something sentiments. It's not sentiments. Many disciples of many gurus, Srila Prabhupada especially, makes this statement. When we got this instruction, it didn't make any sense. But it was just a matter of time. As the time passed, we could understand what is the meaning of this instruction. And also, they give the counter examples of some of their god brothers or, you know, sisters. They also got some instructions which were apparently looked like, you know, just simple instruction, but they didn't follow those instructions. And eventually could see how their spiritual life fell apart just because of one simple reason. So it's very important how nicely we follow the instruction of spiritual master. So it is showing, so in Bhagavatam says, Mahiya Sampada Rajopishekam Nishkinchanana Navranita Yavat. One cannot make spiritual advancement without rolling in the dust coming from the lotus feet of the advanced devotee. So it is dependent. Second point is, when a spiritual master is pleased, then Krishna is pleased. Right? Because a spiritual master, advanced devotee, means he loves Krishna and Krishna loves him. So someone is trying to follow the instruction of the guru, means Krishna is more pleased. As Prabhupada gives the example, now if you want to show me that, if you want to show me that you love me, first you love my dog. If you show, okay, you love my dog, it shows that you love me, right? If someone comes and, you know, kick the dog and, you know, say, you know, I love you, it doesn't make any sense, you know. So go away, you know. If you love me, love my dog. In the same way, Krishna says, okay, if you want to love me, okay, love my devotees. Because they have the same opinion, same desire, same everything as me. Everyone is working in union, so in that way. You had a final question. Yes. But the question is how a person can be without an ego. And second question is, if this ego is the responsible, then why is the intelligence is working? Because when you suffer, legitimately when you expect something, if you do not get, is it this the false ego? Or the question is, when this you do not deprive something, we get pain in the heart. It's the story says in the heart. Where is the link? Yes. The first question is, how can we avoid false ego? Or your question, ego completely. We cannot avoid ego completely. We have ego, it's a reality. But there is false ego and true ego. So there is no question of annihilating the ego completely. False ego is that we are the body and the mind. That is false ego, because we are not the body or the mind. We are spiritual. And true ego is that we are spiritual and we are part and parcel of Krishna. We are servants of Krishna. So that is the true ego. So one can avoid false ego by developing, cultivating true ego. So the whole bhakti process is the process of cultivating our true ego. We are serving Krishna, we are physically showing that I am servant of Krishna. We are hearing the philosophy again and again that we are servants of Krishna. So we are giving the impression, okay, we are really servants of Krishna. So the devotional service, the bhakti can melt and dissipate false ego completely. So one cannot avoid ego completely, but one can transform the false ego to true ego. So that is the one thing. What's the second part?
And second part is when you suffer, what is this, our intelligence?
Okay, yeah. One, okay, in the suffering, you mentioned about the role of the intelligence, and I think the third part you mentioned is how do we get pain when we have some legitimate desires? Legitimate desires, okay. Many times the legitimate desires are illegitimate. That's where the problem starts. Okay. So the role of intelligence is that the intelligence is both, intelligence is matter, mind is, body is matter, intelligence is matter, and false ego is also matter. But Bhagavad Gita gives a hierarchy. So we can see that intelligence is inferior to false ego in terms of its subtlety. So one, it is, the false ego is even deeper than intelligence. So it becomes, material intelligence cannot cover the false ego. What can only cover is the spiritual intelligence. Spiritual intelligence can cover the false ego. That's why we have the Shastra, we have the book. So having gained the spiritual intelligence, one can control the mind. One can, because the reflection of the false ego we can see in the mind. So that can be controlled through purified intelligence, spiritual intelligence. So intelligence has a role, but we need spiritual intelligence. So we need to know Shastra, then we can. And the so-called legitimate desires are not really legitimate. They are illegitimate. What is the legitimate desire? Enjoying in the material world? And different, you know, different ramification of that in different forms and shapes. I want money. World should give me, the universe should give me money. It's not guaranteed. Everyone wants to be rich. Is it guaranteed? No. You think it's a legitimate desire, you can think one will suffer, that's all. Right? So, one has to see what is legitimate desire and what is not. Bhagavad Gita says, if one is in the spiritual, the material well-being follows spiritual well-being. If one is, spiritually one is taken care of, spiritual well-being, if one is happening, then the material well-being will just follow. That is Bhagavatam first canto. So one's spiritual well-being is actually, it is legitimate. At the same time, we need to exist materially, so that is provided. It will be provided. Yes, please. It's a good point. That is a, it's a part of it. Very good point. And Bhagavad Gita points out that we have all the right to perform our duty. Right? At the same time, we cannot expect any result. And if what happens, one shouldn't think that I am the cause of that activity. It's very difficult if you think about it. One shouldn't think that I am the cause of activity. And if we have all these three things, one is performing the duty and one is not desiring for the result, and having said, still one, you know, one doesn't think I am the cause of activity, then the natural feeling of one person is, then I shouldn't do anything because I am not the cause of activity, and even if I do something, I cannot enjoy the fruit, you know, the result is not really for me and I cannot expect any result. Then the natural tendency is, then I will just be lethargic, I don't do anything. So Bhagavad Gita says, no, still one should do one's activity. Now, what is the crux of this verse? Yes, the crux of this verse is that how can one perform activity at the same time one doesn't think I am not the cause of that activity, and second, I don't think that, you know, the results are for me. So this is only possible when one's consciousness is Krishna conscious. One is in the spiritual consciousness. When one is in Krishna consciousness or God consciousness, then one understands that even though I am performing the activity, my body is performing the activity, it's not just me. There is sanction of the Lord is there. I have the desire to do the activity, but there is sanction of the Lord. And the results which are coming, it's up to Krishna, as you mentioned. You know, it is by grace. You know, the results are coming. And having obtained the result, I don't think this result is only for my enjoyment. Rather, one uses the result. Say, for example, one is working hard, one makes some money. One uses that money for, okay, of course, Krishna service, which includes our own maintenance. For example, we offer food stuff to Krishna, and when we take that as offered food, as prasadam. So in that way, there is no reaction to that. And we help oneself, if there is a family, we help oneself to make spiritual progress. So that is using that money in spiritual service. And help that money to help others to make their spiritual endeavor. So these are all activity where one doesn't get attached to the result of the activity. At the same time, one makes spiritual progress, and at the same time, one is maintained. Because one has to maintain this world. So these are different aspects. When we study Bhagavad Gita, especially, one understands how to act in this world. And at the same time, how one can be detached. Which is very important, because we are living in this world, we are not of this world, even though we are living in this world. So we need to realize, with knowledge and practice, that is the sum and substance of this world. stop here. Granthashimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.